Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. I'd like to welcome all of you back to Ohio Exopolitics. I'm your host, Mark Snyder, and we've got a very interesting guest this evening. Her name is Nancy Redstar, and she has a book called Star Ancestors, and it looks like she's working on a series of documentaries called the Star Ancestor Documentary Series. I'd like to welcome Nancy Redstar back to Ohio Exopolitics. Nancy, how are you this evening?
I'm good, Mark. How are you?
I am doing very good. Can you tell the listeners a little bit about yourself and what you're working on these days?
Yes. Right now I'm working on the first episode for PBS, Vision Maker Video. I'm not sure yet where it's going to go, or if it's going to go in there, but they've seen part of it and liked it. And I'm working in a film lab down in Santa Fe editing with an Emmy Award-winning editor. And I'm getting ready and preparing to go back on the History Channel for a feature, actually, of me. And one of the chapters in one of my books, which is, I've written six books. Three of them were military investigations and military in pertaining to the technology, disclosure. I went back into the disclosure project and chose the guys I thought were authentic and not with the CIA. I interviewed them all and did a two-part. I have a two-part book, but, I got involved in trying to get the film together because I felt it was, people aren't reading anymore.
I know.
They used to.
Terrible.
They can't concentrate that much, to be able to sit down like that.
Yeah.
It's hard for people. There's so much outer stimulation. So, film, and that's the way to get the message out. However, the even the ability to concentrate watching film has been reduced to seconds for the public. I mean, they just don't
I think you're right. I personally really, I like to sit down and read a book, but that's not real common these days, is it?
It's not common at all. It's not common at all. I mean, there's still older people read a lot. The people who grew up reading are still reading.
Right.
But, as far as the public at large, it's difficult. Then you got to go into another genre, like a memoir or something, which is something that I met with somebody today who I was talking about, who was a publicity person in New York, trying to think about, I'm working on the film now, and I decided because I began this film in 2006 or something, and at that time there was only standard definition. Then it went into 720p and 1080p, and now it's 4K and 8K. And if you want to get something on broadcast, they won't take 1080p hardly, which is still high definition, but they won't take 720p. It doesn't look so great, And, if you don't have deep pockets, it's hard to stay up with the... That's one thing that keeps documentary filmmakers from continuing is the technology always changes, and it just gets, it's expensive career.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to raise the money to operate on all levels, unless you're, independently wealthy. And so it takes a long time to raise that money. You shoot your film, and then you got to raise the money. It's harder to get a film distributed than it is to get the money together to make it. So once you've made it, you're stuck with the dilemma of distribution. And this isn't it. I'm actually going to be starting to distribute this up. I'm with Red Lake Nation. I got federally enrolled last year. Well, I was enrolled you know, before, but it became federal when I turned 65 because we got all the paperwork that, you know, that we that I needed to get that done. And so I'm going to be distributing this up through the Ojibwe nations up in Canada through the school system, because as I'm looking at it, I really feel that that's where it needs to go. I mean, it's all Indian people talking, and there's a blackout on Indians in the media in the U.S.
Mm.
You have to go through only certain distribution channels to really get something out in terms of a short film or a feature or a documentary. And so it is difficult.
Tell us how your Star Ancestors film starts out. Where does it begin?
Well, the first one begins in Kanindashe, and I'm interviewing a historian for the Anasazi and the Navajo Nation. And his great-great-grandfather was a very famous peace chief that ended up going on the longest walk, you know, that the Navajo had to do when they tried to take their land. And his great-great-grandfather was the one that got the Kanindashe back for the Navajo Nation. So I interviewed him down in the Hogan at the bottom of the base of the Kanindashe about all the star information that had been given to him through the generations. So it's an amazing interview. And
sorry to interrupt you. How far back do you have to go? How far in the past did these contacts occur with the Navajo?
Well, these contacts with a lot of indigenous people go back, you know, before Columbus.
Yeah.
There are star maps and star maps drawn up in the caves, and some of the I'm not sure if you're familiar with the Southwest, but like Bandelier site, there's a lot of different sites of caves which are alcoves, which were where the Anasazi lived, up in these cliffs in these caves, and that was the place where the Anasazi lived down in the area of Kanindashe. And in the Anasazi drew star maps.
Mm-hmm.
And they had a lot of rituals that he knew about because he grew up right down there. And
did
so
you interview anyone that had any stories of actual landings and meeting the extraterrestrials and talking with them or having some kind of
Well,
direct...
they don't use the craft. Most of those craft came out of the Third Reich. They
okay.
don't travel through. They only have some motherships. And
mm-hmm.
the difference between the actual real craft or technology, let's say, the interdimensional or the transportation vehicle, they use it for protection from military of other countries, of any country. But
mm-hmm.
they don't need it to get here.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah. That's not really the way they travel. Yeah.
Do they kind of transport? Can they... literally
they
go
can,
from...
Yeah. They can departicleize.
Oh, and that's really interesting.
And a lot of them travel in those orbs. That's really how they travel.
And how
that's
large
how they
are
manifest.
These orbs? Are they larger orbs or small orbs? Or?
Well, you know, the orbs are funny because you can't see them all with the human eye. You can see them with a digital camera, but orbs are kind of difficult. You can't really see them with the human eye. They're in
right.
another... But the digital cameras seem to pick them up. That's how this sort of started. I've seen some really big ones. There was a woman that came here I used to do tours around the ruins, you know, all up and down
mm-hmm.
New Mexico to Arizona. And a woman and some people came from England for a tour. And she was very well known for photographing these. I knew very little about them. And she photographed the ones on my house, and they were huge.
Wow.
I mean, they're as big as a Cadillac.
The,
they were huge, and she...
Go ahead.
They were big. I had never seen them big.
And could you see them with your eyes, or were they only caught on camera?
I've never seen them with my eyes. Maybe some people can.
Okay.
Anybody who's seen them has seen them in a digital context because they appear through a certain high definition that are they're beyond our eyes. If mm-hmm. you think about a camera, a telescopic lens, a zoom, you know, all the things that it can do. And for some reason, it's able to, this is how it started. It was being picked up by digital cameras.
The contacts that the Navajo had, did they ever describe how these extraterrestrials looked? Did they look human? Were they tall?
Well, I didn't get anything about that. But I know that one story that I have in my book, in the first chapter, was translated from an incident that took place at Big Mountain, which is the sort of partition land between the Navajo and the Diné. And a woman who was up in that area, Irene Yazzie, she had been blind and couldn't speak for the last 10 years of her life, and I think she was almost 98. And she lived in an old hogan, traditional, you know, no electricity, because they don't like places with a lot of electricity. They stay away from wires and electricity and all that because they can be detected more easily in an area like that. So they like to go to places where there's no electricity poles. And out on the Navajo Reds, there are. And all of a sudden, this lady saw this light coming into the hogan. And, you know, sometimes they have windows. They can put little windows to look out from the hogan, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And there were these two corn pollen deities, which they call the holy people, outside of her hogan. And the next thing she knew, there were inside of her hogan two of them standing inside of a corn pollen circle that on the ground that they had made. And they gave her instructions, and after they left, she could talk, and she was all of the issues she had before. Like I told you, she had had a stroke and she couldn't talk. She could talk, and she delivered the message. Then medicine men from all over the country came.
Wow.
You know, from North Dakota, South Dakota, Wyoming, Montana. They closed everything down. There was no media. It wasn't a media event. The animals were taken away, and they all came to her house to bring, you know, gifts for this thing, because these corn pollen deities were bringing a warning. And that was like in 1997.
What kind of warning was it?
A warning pertaining to the Navajo Nation and the Hopi people.
Okay.
And what they were supposed to do with, to maintain their tradition and culture, and that was what it was about, that, the language, the culture, the tradition, and the relations.
Are some Native Americans kind of secretive about these contacts that they have?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, they don't talk about it outside of, particularly in this part of the country. You know, I don't know if you've ever heard Clifford Mahuti talking, but
I think so.
He was, you know, up over on Zuni. They came down into the Kiva. I mean, he talks, you know, they're not really allowed to, it's sort of like taboo, you know,
mm-hmm.
because you talk about it can be taken. So it's something you keep sacred and secret. It's more sacred than secret, okay? It's sacred. You don't, just like a vision. You're not supposed to talk about your visions, you know. They're for you.
Oh, is that right?
You're supposed to learn from that vision. It's specifically for you, unless you're under the tutelage of a headman or something.
Mm-hmm.
You know, who could interpret it for you? So, basically, it was a message for those nations. And it's in my book, and people, if they want to learn about it, they can read it.
Can you tell us about the significance of your name, Red Star?
Well, that name came through a marriage.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Yeah, I was married to a Crow Full Blood Crow man whose last name was Red Star. And so when we were no longer married, but, you know, you might get my name.
Interesting.
And, my Indian name is Nivia.
What does that have a meaning?
And that's, yeah, but you don't, you know, you don't tell people. You know, you keep a lot of it to yourself. I mean,
I see.
That's actually not my spiritual name. It's a translation, actually, of my name, last name in English, the way it is now.
Okay.
But the spiritual name that I have was given to me by a 104-year-old Taos Pueblo woman before she passed away. And that's a private name, you know. You don't, like...
You don't tell that.
Everybody. Yeah, you don't. It's for ceremonies.
Very interesting.
So I don't know how other people are, but this is the way I was taught, you know. I mean, a lot of people take on these Indian-sounding names, but really, though, the spiritual names are not supposed to go out like that, in that way. And, for instance, the Taos Pueblo is very, very, they protect their teachings extremely. These people here are Hopi. They stayed here from the migration, the original migration out of the Grand Canyon. They migrated, the Hopi, the Zuni, the Taos. A lot of these people migrated out of the Grand Canyon from the other world, the world before.
Can you tell us about that? So the Hopi lived, did they live in the canyon or literally in the ground?
They migrated to that place they were told by the Creator. They were told where to go, but they had to find it. You know, it was part of their teachings. And they knew where they had to go, but they had to get there, and they were told not to stop and build cities along the way. And some of them did. And they never got to Hopi. You know, they never got to the Sipapuni, which is the center of the four sacred mountains of the Southwest. That's the four, you know, around. There are four sacred mountains that guard the four corners of the Southwest. So there's, you know, there's one in each state.
The Hopi had to go into the Grand Canyon. Was there a disaster coming that they were trying to avoid?
They were coming out from the ending of the disaster. There was a disaster in the previous world. You know, there's a Sphinx out in the Grand Canyon.
You're kidding.
It's older than the Sphinx. It's older than the Sphinx. Well, you want me to send you a picture of it?
Oh, that would be
email?
Awesome.
Yeah, let me.
You actually took a picture of this. That's fantastic.
I got...
It's older than the Sphinx in Egypt.
Yes. Well,
now,
you know,
have
they,
any
they
researchers?
Did you know that
have other researchers seen this Sphinx?
Yes, they pulled all these Egyptian artifacts out of the Grand Canyon, and the Smithsonian took them and they hid them in the early 1900s. A Hopi man took a guy down there. Okay, he guided him down there, and they pulled all this stuff out. I'm talking about serious Egyptian gold artifacts were in there, all sorts of things. You've never seen them?
I've never seen a Sphinx in the Grand Canyon, no. I didn't know there was one. That's incredible.
Have you seen the artifacts? The Egyptian artifacts?
I have not seen them, but I have heard stories about this sort of thing.
Okay,
like,
yeah, they exist. So you can see them. You can see what they got. You can hear the story. But, you know, it was not given to the people. It was hidden. It's hidden. It's hidden knowledge.
Yeah.
There are remnants of it. You know, people know about it, but most people don't. I'm going to send you. I'm going to send you the picture.
Oh, that'd be great. That'd be fantastic.
And then you can see how old it is because it's more worn than the. You see, the Sphinx is the cover for the book of the Earth. And the book of the earth is the history of the earth and what happened. And the knowledge is in the pyramid, and the Sphinx is the cover. So it's all. I'm sending it to you right now.
Okay.
You'll see it. You're going to see it right away.
Now, who wrote the Book of the Earth?
It's an Egyptian funerary text.
Is it in
hieroglyphics? Why do you think the Cherokee wore turbans?
This is very fascinating. So are the Native Americans then related to the Egyptians?
Yes.
Oh, that is fascinating.
Yes, they are. But most Indians don't know it. Like, my name is Sumerian language. See, a lot of people are saying the Cherokee are related to the Hebrews, but that's not so. The Cherokee are related to the Arabs, the Arab. My name is Sumerian. That language that Sequoia put out, is the base root is Arabic. But if you think about it, the Arabs and the Jews are really cousins anyway. I mean,
sure.
They are related, you know. And they divided into different, it's like what happened here, you know. The Crow killed the Lakota, worked for the United States Army, you know.
Mm.
So different tribes, you know, like up in New England, the Abenaki sided with the French. The Iroquois sided with the English, and they fought each other. So basically what it is the government comes in with the divide-and-conquer tactic, and that's what they did within the Indian nations. The Indian nations in the before Columbus, because the name Columbus was not the name of the man. Columbus is the act coming here and to destroy the ancient teachings.
Oh,
that's
my.
What the act of Columbus is. The name of the man they call Columbus, that's not his name. He was a crypto Jew that worked for the Vatican.
No kidding.
Mm-hmm.
That's phenomenal. So the ancient teaching.
He was from Spain. He was not Italian, okay? And that's not his name. His name is Juan. I've got his name. I did a video about it. But they came here to destroy the ancient cultures and teachings. That's specifically why they came here, with the Columbus Act. It was an action to destroy.
Hmm.
Like they do everywhere. Look what they do in Syria. Look what they do in Yemen. Everywhere they go, they do the same thing. They destroy cultures and kill people. That's their modus operandi. Because they take the resources. That's all that they want.
You were telling us about how the Hopi had to go into the Grand Canyon. Can you tell us more about
Came out of the Grand Canyon.
They came out of the Grand Canyon.
The Zuni came out of the Grand Canyon. They emerged. They went. They were in the Grand Canyon. There's an underground tunneling system. Like, okay, I could go to Hopi from Powaki Pueblo underground.
How far
There's
is
tunnel
that?
System. You know, it's 7 hours by car.
My goodness.
There's an underground tunnel system different, okay, than the underground military bases, because these were before, right? There was a whole transit system underground, just like ISIS does, right? You know,
mm-hmm.
They're underground now. They're doing everything underground right now in the Middle East, or they are underground.
So when, the previous world was coming to an end, some disaster.
The fourth world.
The fourth world.
Now the fourth world is coming to an end. Then the third world, you know, I'm not sure the time, because if we had more information from the artifacts, but the Smithsonian took them and they have them hidden in Washington, D.C., and so we can't know how old they are. You know, we don't know the history of the artifacts because they won't allow them to be seen. It just so happened that these were seen because somebody related to the non-Indian man, I think, might have been the one who had the photographs. You know, it's pictures and pictures of both of the Hopi man and the, I don't know what you want to call him. I mean, I guess he was not an archaeologist, but maybe I'm not sure exactly what he was, what his field. I could find out. I have to look, but I can't remember. But he was the main. He was the guy that was trying to get in there. I mean, there's tombs with what are the urns, funerary urns with Egyptian mummies in them. Came out of the Grand Canyon. There's mountains that are called the Temple of Isis. That part of America is called the Second Egypt.
Isn't Ohio called Little Egypt sometimes?
Well, yeah, because you're talking about a group of people that were had special gifts at that time.
Isn't Ohio a Shawnee word?
You know what's really interesting? I did an interview for one of my books with the translator for the Dalai Lama, because I was going to go interview the Rinpoche at the monastery in Woodstock, New York, who had been there like 20. He was one of the first monks to come over here from Tibet and open up these monasteries. And this guy told me that the word Ohi-A-O, Ohio, is actually the Tibetan teachings.
That's incredible.
And when they came from Tibet, you know where they went? Ohio.
I have no idea.
The first place they went to was Ohio.
Ohi-O is how they pronounce it?
Yeah, I've got it all translated, actually, in my, if you get my second Star Ancestors book, because it's a trilogy, there's an interview in there with a Rinpoche, and I have a picture of the Ohi-A-O and the translation given to me by the Dalai Lama's translator. It's their ancient teachings, Ohio. Makes you wonder. And you know what else they found?
No.
There were Buddhist sculptures in the Grand Canyon like they had in Afghanistan. Remember when ISIS tore down that temple in Syria?
Oh, yeah.
And there was monks, you know, statues of Buddhas. Remember that?
Mm-hmm.
They destroyed that temple. Well, there were statues of Buddhas in the Grand Canyon, too.
It's so frustrating that our history has been hidden from us.
Yeah, I know, but not anymore. It's not hidden anymore, because the Creator and those beings that are really involved in this transition that are working, let's say there's two paths. There's a right-hand path and the left-hand path. And the ones on the left-hand path are, you know, that's the dark path, but the light path is the right-hand path. That's what you see in Hahokia. You know that hand, that mica hand?
I'm not familiar with that.
Well, down at the Hohokia Mount, specifically, if you go in the museum, there's a hand, and it's made of mica, and it's long. The fingers are almost twice as long as a human hand, and it's
Wow. The
right-hand path. So they're showing us, you know, the teaching to follow that right-hand path, not the left. Because the same, you know, history repeats itself in the same cycles with the same players and the same theater and the same issues, you know, concerning the 1% and the 99, the royalty and the people.
I wanted to ask you about the Serpent Mound in Ohio here. Are there underground pyramids anywhere around there?
I really don't know.
Okay. I just wondered if you had ever heard anything that at that time.
I don't know, but... you know, the Serpent Mound is a very important spot.
Tell us about that a little bit.
Well, it's the teachings, you know. Again, you know, there's such a problem because you get the Christian teachings of the serpent and Adam and Eve and that story.
Yeah.
But in our indigenous belief, the serpent is the woman, the power of the woman and the wisdom.
Ah. So the serpent isn't evil in the native teachings?
No, and in the Mayan, the serpent, like on the equinox, the conjunction of the planet forms a serpent, and the head of the serpent is the Pleiades. And so that serpent, you know, even on the temples, like Chichen Itza, when the east spring equinox comes and that sun does what it does, there's a snake that forms on the shadow on the stairs. Well,
I've seen that. Isn't that amazing?
That's the mother, you know. That's who they're trying to kill, Mother Earth.
Yeah. Boy, isn't that the
truth? That's
what
they're doing. You know, that's part of their project. They're terraforming the Earth. They want an artificial intelligence, and they're trying to merge humans with machines.
That's the whole, what do they call that movement where they're trying to merge?
Transhumanism.
Humans?
That's
yes,
their big,
yes.
You know.
Transhumanism.
They're not going to get that far.
I hope not. You know, I want to ask more questions about Ohio, but I don't know if that's fair to do. Is there anything significant about the energy point, energies
well,
from
I
the...
Well, I will... let me read... Let me see if I can find this. Well, it is very important. I mean, it's probably one of the... You know, I guess you could say it is one of the chakras of the Earth planet. You know, there's points
mm-hmm.
at which, you know, that are connected to each other along these lines of degrees, right? Energy
mm-hmm.
lines and degrees of certain numbers that are cosmic numbers. And so that point in itself is one of the placeholders for the energy grids that, you know, those energy lines and those sacred spots where there's temples is what keeps, you know, kind of massages the heartbeat of Mother Earth.
Tell
and
me about
her,
the... Go ahead.
And keeps
Sorry.
Her, you know, keeps her functioning. It's part of the makeup of the harmonics frequency, you know. And they used to use, they on the mounds, I got some information that, about what goes on at the mounds, what used to go on from some Cree elders, and they were part of a star blanket clan up in Saskatchewan. Mm-hmm. And they had knowledge of some of the ceremonies that were going on there and what actually they did. They had created let me find this so I can get it right.
Sure.
It's
no
like
problem.
A columnar wave, okay? They used a frequency to create a wave that had a technology to it, and they had used feathers and beads as antenna and transistors.
Wow.
And they created a columnar wave they danced around, and they had the ability to transmit communication, okay, to the source of their culture,
mm-hmm.
the spiritual source, the ancestors of their culture. And this is what the Cree told me, and it's really a fascinating story. And when I was on the History Channel, I did go over that with them, but they didn't put it on. But this
you know, that's terrible. Sometimes they don't cover the good stuff, do they?
Well, they've got a lot, you know, they've got a certain amount of time. I know now, having edited a film, your options, you know, you've got a certain amount of time, and it's very tight. And, you know, if you can get the thought in there in a concise way and move on to the next thought, you know, but you think about it, they've got a lot of people they're interviewing, you know.
Oh, sure. Sure.
There's a lot of people on those shows, so you only have a certain amount of time with each person.
They probably could do a whole series just on you and what you've learned. They should do that, I would say.
Well, there's something going on now. They're featuring me in an episode, and I'm bringing in other people for them for this episode, but I can't talk about it.
Okay.
But,
I won't ask any questions.
So, that, you know, like you could call it a mystery school. They created a standing columnar wave at the Serpent Mound, and it was part of how they worked with that primordial DNA. And they taught people how to use the medicine wheel or the kiva to activate that grid. So you see, the Serpent Mound is on a ley line. It's on a grid. And so what they did is the students of that culture, you know, at the Serpent Mound were learning the secrets of energy, and they were tracking the powers of subatomic matter.
Wow.
And they were using the feathers as antennae and the beads as transistors to balance their aura and to create a pulsating light with a radius of 40 miles. So it was like an electromagnetic attunement with Earth. And it was a column of light, and it became a fire. So
and
it was the
was
light
at the,
of...
At the Serpent Mound in Ohio.
Yep, and they said that the light of electromagnetism was lost during the Mound period. But it actually has begun being activated now again. Of course, it has to come through the harmonics of sound and light. That's what the pyramids are about, right? It's the same thing as the pyramids.
Hmm.
It's a way of how do you say it? Lassoing the electromagnetic power of subatomic matter. So you're bringing it in. You're bringing subatomic matter down to the earth, to where you are. And that allows you to create a pulsating frequency of light. And that's what they did. And it would be 40 miles.
That's huge.
This is the kind of power these people had.
I have heard
that,
amazing? I've heard that when the astronauts were orbiting the earth, when they would come over the Serpent Mound area, they could see a little bit of a light that would flash. Have you heard about that?
No.
Yeah, I've heard that. It's interesting that you bring that up. Do you have
That's
any information on...
That's a very rare thing to actually hear because, you know, you don't get that, you know, I had never heard that before.
Really?
But now it makes a lot of sense because, you know, they were doing the same thing in Egypt with the pyramid. They were harnessing subatomic matter and using it. They had electricity in the pyramids.
Oh, sure. Yeah, definitely. You know, you've touched on so many fascinating topics. I mean, just the idea of a Sphinx being in the Grand Canyon is just over the top. It's just amazing.
Did you get the picture?
I looked and I didn't see it. I'll have to check my email again. But did you take this? Did you take this picture yourself?
No. This is part of the material that came through of the artifacts from the Grand Canyon.
Okay, I got the email, and I clicked on the picture. It'll take a while. Unfortunately, it's coming up in Adobe Photoshop, which will... Okay, wow, that is in the Grand Canyon. You got to be
kidding
me.
Can you believe it?
I cannot believe it.
So that what that is called is the cover. Okay? That's the cover of the Book of the Earth.
That is the most amazing thing. I guess it's worn enough where the naysayers could say, "Oh, you know, it's just a shape of a I don't know what they would say, but it looks just like a Sphinx to me."
Oh, well, it's just incredibly worn. But see, you have to know, if you see the artifacts they pulled out of, because it's way older than the one in Egypt.
It is older.
Well, the Phoenicians
were
here, the Egyptians were here, they were here. That's the whole point.
Would you...
They were seafaring people. Indigenous people are seafaring people.
Mm-hmm. So how far back do the Egyptians go? 70,000 years, 100,000 years?
I don't know. I'm not an Egyptologist, and I wouldn't want to say something that was wrong. But, I mean, I'm sure I could find out, but offhand, I can't give you the exact time. But it's biblical.
Well, some researchers are dating the Sphinx in Egypt now at 20,000 years. I think it could be even older than that, just personally.
Mm-hmm.
Just my own opinion.
Well, they call this part of the world the Second Egypt. That's what the name of this part of this world is.
So, do you think this world that we're in now is coming to an end?
Yeah, I don't think the entire world is coming to an end, no.
But it's a disaster. There's some disaster that's...
It's the end of one world
an age.
In the beginning. It's already started. The new age has already started.
Okay.
But there's going to be we can't go forward with the planet in the condition that it's in the environment, because they've decimated the water, the land, the food. I mean, we can't eat the food anymore because they're poisoning the food, poisoning the water, poisoning the land. And
right.
So the earth itself will know that what it has to do to regenerate itself. And the elders, the headmen, like up on the Iroquois, the Seneca man that I used to work with, he just said that she's going to turn inside out and throw up her skirt, and people are going to come flying off of it. So there's going to be a lot of lives lost because people aren't, they're not, you can't go into the next world with weapons. It's not going to be that kind of world. It's over for that in this next world. We can't evolve. Because we've done this cycle, this war cycle and destruction of the earth and the people, and we've done that for many four worlds, and we're still doing it, and the next world can't be done. Because we can't evolve if we're killing.
Right.
And so we have to get beyond that, you know, and that's what she's going to help us do that by destroying a lot of things. It's just going to be a cleaning. It's a purification. They call them, you know, they call the Red Star Kachina that they call Nibiru.
Mm-hmm.
The Red Star Kachina is a purifier that's coming to purify the earth. And it's coming, it's imminent. We're right there. This year is the year, 2017. You know, if you add 1984 and 33 degree, you know what it comes to?
2017, maybe?
2017, huh?
Yeah, 2017.
Yep, we're there. We've arrived, and so now we have to just get through it. Because, as you know, it's not going to be easy. It's not easy now. So it's going to be... The cities are going to be bad.
Yeah, you know, I had a guest on... Not 2 days ago, Matt Bracken, a former Navy SEAL, that was saying the same thing.
Yeah, I heard of him.
Oh, yeah, yeah. He says the cities are death traps. You don't want to be in the
cities. You got to be out of there by now. If you're not out of the city now, if you don't know by now, it's kind of late. Because if you're out of the city, then you've got to prepare. You got to prep. Me, I live on a fruit farm, and I got three wood stoves, you know.
That's good.
And a lot of oil can... If something goes down, I mean, I feel like, well, I can stay warm. You know, I've got wood. And
sure.
So those... There are things that need to be considered.
Tell me about the little people.
From the book?
Yeah, yeah. The little people weren't the Shawnee... were the Shawnee, did they try to kill the little people?
I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Seneca would know more because the Seneca almost adopted the Shawnee. I mean, they were really close with, because it's Erie, Pennsylvania, right? But they were, where is the Shawnee Reservation in Oklahoma? Right.
I don't know off the top of my head. Now, you guys, do you consider the little people as being extraterrestrial?
Well, the Cherokee have little people in their legends and stories. And
I've
actually,
heard.
Yeah. I didn't write I only interviewed a Cherokee man about the little people, and I don't really know too much about him, simply because I guess, you know, I just had to keep going with other things, you know. And I can't really speak on the little people because you can't speak on them unless you really know what you're saying. So I don't want to guess or pretend. I interviewed a man from the Mi'kmaq Reservation from Nova Scotia who had some stories about, he called them little boys. And the little boys were in the rocks, and they had special faces with telepathic funnels. And he called them little boys, and I think they're similar to little people. But as far as the real mystery of the little people, I don't want to, you know, I don't want to speak on it because I don't really know.
Really interesting. You know, there's,
they're very important, but.
There is just so much information in this one book of yours, and you say you have 6 books.
I wrote Star Ancestors is a trilogy. My publisher wouldn't publish the third one because Leonard Peltier was in there, and at that time he was trying to get clemency, and the FBI were picketing the White House, and I don't know, I suspect that's why they didn't do it, because there was no reason why they would not publish it, but he had some things to say, Leonard. You know, I went over to Fort Leavenworth Prison and interviewed him there. And then I was his art broker for a little while. So,
no,
you know,
kidding.
I know
wow.
Him. Yeah.
So they didn't publish your third book.
They didn't publish the third book. And on the way back from the Fort Leavenworth Prison, the police started following me. And the police took my license. And it was a Friday. And he said,
what?
I'm going to take your license because there's a warrant out for you.
A warrant?
I said, what warrant? What are you talking about? He said, it's a warrant from New York because my license, you know, because I'm from back up in New England area. That's where I grew up. So my license was a New York license from when me and Kevin Red Star were living up in Woodstock area. And so I had a New York license. So they saw it. And he said, well, you got a warrant in New York. But I lived in New Mexico, you know. So
that doesn't seem like, that sounds terrible. I can't believe they could, that's almost like stealing.
Said,
I can't believe that.
I know. And he said to me, I'll take you to jail, but then you won't get out till Monday. He said, so I'm just going to let you go. And I had to drive back from Kansas through Oklahoma to New Mexico with no license.
That's insane.
Isn't that horrible?
That's absolutely
and
horrible.
And I got back and there wasn't, I called New York and there was nothing. So they sent my license back to me when I got to Taos.
Oh, my goodness.
I guess that was don't come back.
Yeah, it sounds like they were trying to intimidate you or something.
Yeah, they were. I got great pictures of Leonard in Fort Leavenworth. I was the executive producer on Who is Leonard Peltier, which was a film. I actually at that time, I had won a out of Asia. I had gotten funding for 7 documentaries. I hadn't gotten the money, but I got the approval. Okay, I had to go through a whole year process of it, and I got funding. So I was starting to fund other projects. You know, I was looking into funding, you know, getting some other documentaries made that weren't mine. And Leonard's was the one that I was going to do. I was executive producer of it. And then the guy who was involved in distributing the funds was murdered at an army base in Malaysia.
Wow.
Yeah. Where he was from. And he had some money. Let me tell you, he had some money that came out of this Malaysian gold. Remember, you know? Yamamoto's gold and the Nazi gold, and there's gold hidden in the Philippines in these caves and caverns from the Second World War, and other gold apparently from the 17th century that was put together for a poor people's fund, and it's supposed to be distributed to all of the people of the world, not the leaders. And this guy was in charge of that money, and it's still, they didn't get that money. I don't think they got the money from him. He died instead. They tortured him. I had a picture of him in the cell. And they were torturing him to try to find out where he had hit it. And he died, and he didn't tell them. So that's what happened with that. It was really sad. Yeah.
So is there any link between some of the indigenous people here on Earth and the planet Mars?
I don't know. I mean, there's been migrations through planetary systems. I mean, each race has a star or a planet of origination. You know, that's why the word Anishinaabe, man who came down from the sky, you know?
Mm-hmm.
The Iroquois have the woman who came from the sky. The same thing, you know, you find that in different cultures, but it's the Pleiades, you know, that's the star system of origination, but there's seven sisters. So I was told by a Mayan calendarist down in Mexico, in the Yucatan, that each race has a planet of origination, you know.
So the red race has a planet of origination.
Right.
The white race, the black race, the yellow race, et cetera.
Yeah. Yeah, each color has its planet of origination.
Well, would it make sense that the red race came from Mars?
No, the red race didn't come from Mars.
Okay.
You know, the red race is connected to the Pleiades.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Yeah. But
do all of these
white
races
is connected to Mars? See, each race has an element of Earth also they're connected to, right?
Sure. Sure.
They're responsible for guardianship of. And so, yeah.
So the white race originated on Mars?
Oh, I don't know.
Okay,
But I'm saying it looks like a place, because you look at the look at what's up there.
Right.
Cydonia, the face, there's a couple of faces.
And it's very interesting that we have the same kind of structures here on Earth, too.
Well, they're all on the same ley line, see? They're all on the same 19.5 degrees above the horizon. That's what Richard Hoagland discovered. If you take Mars and you connect it, you know, Cydonia on Mars, and then you connect it to Avery and Silbury, and then you connect it to, I'm not sure if it's in the Yucatan or not, but they're all connected on a ley line. So where interplanetary beings, human beings, whatever you want to call them, travel, you know, they land, they build monuments, they bring their culture with them, and then other cultures come and teach them higher knowledge, you know. That's why they had batteries in Iraq 5,000 years ago, you know.
Right, right.
I mean, Iraq was the place. It was a very important place.
So we have a very ancient past. From what you're saying, the Hopi, and correct me if I'm wrong, came through the tunnel system and then up out of the Grand Canyon.
The Hopi, the Zuni, other people, not the Navajo, because the Navajo are Athabascan. They're from up in Alaska area. You know, they're Athabascan.
Okay.
They're not from here. They migrated here.
Okay.
But the tribes that were here, the Anasazi, which became the Pueblos, and then you have the Hopi, the Zuni, you know, they are Anasazi people. They're descendants of the Anasazi, truly, the Pueblo people.
And are the Anasazi extraterrestrial?
Well, no. They're Mayan. Hmm.
They're Mayan. So
did they come from the south.
Oh,
there were
apparently
the Anasazi that were in the Canyon de Chelly were like 3 feet high.
They were that short?
They were that small, 3 to 4 feet high.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. That's what the Navajo told me when I did the interview. I've got it on tape. They were very small.
They've also found giant skeletons in the Grand Canyon, right?
I don't know about giant skeletons. We had burials up in Vermont when I was, well, what happened with the Abenaki is I got them an international attorney to file genocide at The Hague. And, you know, as a result of that, the government put a warrant out for my arrest in Vermont.
No kidding.
No, and I had Abenaki license plates, not U.S. license plates, so they put a warrant out for me, and the tribe brought me in as a citizen because for protection, because I had brought them an international attorney to file genocide at The Hague, which we did. We filed
really
genocide, which you're not even allowed to use that word in the United Nations. You're not allowed to use the word genocide.
Nancy, I have a caller, if you don't mind taking a caller. Is that okay?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. 402, you're on the air.
Hi there, it's Karen.
Hey, Karen, how are you?
Hey, I'm good. Hi, Nancy.
Hi.
Hi. I'm calling from Taos, New Mexico, is where I live.
Well, that's where I live.
I didn't know that. I thought I caught that on the show. That's awesome. yeah, I live in El Prado, in fact. Yes.
El Prado, the bull.
Yes, the bull.
I probably know you. What's your name?
Karen. I'm pretty new to the new to town, so
okay.
But I'd love to meet you sometime and
me too.
Talk.
Really?
So much in common. Question I have for you, and this is very personal to me, and I won't tell you why, but at least not on the air. But Are there supposed to be other caches similar to the Grand Canyon? Has there been any hint or writing about other caches?
Oh, there are. There are. Well, if you look at Edgar Cayce, he pretty much gave us heads up on that. And, you know, he had these, let's see, what did he call it? I'm not an Edgar Cayce researcher, but he had... Well, he had predicted that there would be unlocked secrets coming out of Egypt and coming out of Mexico and a few other places, Antarctica. Antarctica, they've discovered some technology that's probably
right.
over a billion years old.
Wow.
That's what's going on up there.
There's stuff and happening, yeah.
There's an entrance to the inner Earth up there. That's why they're there. And God only knows what they're doing up there. Because nothing they do is good. So.
Right. Yeah.
What about Buzz Aldrin? Do you know anything about why he had to leave or what he experienced?
Where'd he go?
Well, he went down to Antarctica, and then had some kind of health problem or something. And there's a lot of rumors flying around that something he saw or something they told him almost gave him a heart attack or something.
Yeah, I don't know. He's a Mason. So, you know, I find that hard to believe. That he knows what's going on. He's a Mason.
Yeah. It could be just a rumor. I don't know.
There's a lot of rumors about Antarctica right now because they don't want anybody to know what's going on up there.
Right.
So they found billion-year-old technology, and there's an entrance.
I'm waiting for some information about it from somebody else was going to send me a link to find out what they found up there, what they think that they – there's some whistleblowers right now. But
is
I haven't
right?
heard – yeah, I'm waiting for the link about what's going on up there from these whistleblowers, you know. And you never know with whistleblowers either. Because a lot of times they're just,
people make stuff up.
Yeah,
sometimes.
Or if they're, you know, working for the government and to deflect.
Send you down a rabbit hole.
Right.
Put you on a wild goose chase. So you two live in the same town? You got
to
be kidding me.
Can you believe that? How did
I cannot believe that. It's just ridiculous.
Do you always listen to this radio show?
Well, actually, I was on the show last night. I interviewed Mark. We had some questions for him. I've had my own show before, and I've heard of you. In fact, we might have been at the same conference a few years back. Well, I was at the in Phoenix at the Embracing Contact It seems
was
like that
you
were
the
there.
One where Stephen Greer was charging $600 to call the ships
no.
down?
No. No. This was just okay. Let's get past this idea. We have to argue about is there contact, and let's talk about embracing contact and what we want to do about it.
Oh, okay.
I never.
I don't go to those conferences very much.
And then I went to the very first Star Nation conference that was in Farmington, the very first
yes,
one.
I think.
And that was awesome. And then it kind of, you know, it got big and got expensive and far away. So.
Yeah. What's your last name? What's your name?
Oh, can I can
oh, you don't want to
connect
say your name.
With you on Facebook? I have, well, I use a different name on Facebook.
Okay.
So.
Yeah, go over to my page, Nancy Red Star Illuminari News.
Okay, yeah, I'm there right now, actually.
Okay, and just send me a friend request.
I just did. Yeah,
okay.
That'll be great. I'd love to talk to you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where did you move from?
Well, actually, the last place I lived, I've been traveling with work, but Cortez, Colorado, you know, right in the smack dab Four Corners.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
But before that, I came from the southeastern part of Utah. So I've been in the Four Corners area for quite a while, and I decided to stay here, actually, because of, you know, some of the predictions and prophecies about what would be some stable areas to live in.
It is stable.
Know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's stable here. Yeah. And the water's still good. I mean, we have some problems here with Agenda 21 coming in, but, you know, for now, you do the best with what you got, right?
Yep. Well, thank you for fielding my question. I'm going to look up that Edgar Cayce material. I didn't realize he spoke to that. Yeah.
He spoke to these discoveries that were coming in this age about, you know, the history of the Earth, the Book of the Earth coming out.
Excellent. That's exciting.
Yeah.
Well, thanks,
well, thanks
Mark,
Karen. I appreciate you calling
question.
In.
Yeah.
I'll put you back on mute now.
Okay.
Nancy, we've gone a little bit over time, and
yeah.
I want you to be able to tell the listeners again about your books, your website, and your movie that's coming out, your movies,
okay.
I should say.
Well, people can keep track of me at StarAncestorsFilm.com, and the film, I don't know when, you know, I don't know where it's going to end up. Right now, I'm preparing it with specs for PBS Vision Maker Video. I don't know if it'll, you know, I think they're going to love it. They already love what they saw, but, you know, it has to be finished. We're almost done.
Awesome.
So, yeah.
Looking forward
but
to that. Nancy, I appreciate you coming on the show. It's been a lot of fun chatting with you again.
Okay.
Talk to us again soon, okay?
All righty.
We'll see you. Have a good evening.
Then. You too.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.